Blog Talk Radio.
Lots of stuff to talk to you about today, including our current top five team power rankings, and we got some discussion about the Philadelphia Eagles, about the Chicago Bears, about the Green Bay Packers, Martavis Bryant and that Pittsburgh Steelers stuff, and a bunch of other things, including the Arizona Cardinals, and much, much more. Ryan, how you doing?
Good, I'm doing. How are you?
All right, so I was just explaining to our listeners that we are now back on track. That was, of course, par for the course for us, as everyone knows.
Yes, one technical difficulty per show, so right on par.
Right, and we actually had a couple good shows in a row there where we didn't have any, so we were due. It was going to happen at some point. But we're back on track now.
Absolutely.
We're back on track, and I have to say one thing that I noticed earlier in the day, and I have to admit I kind of heard this on an ESPN podcast. Tomorrow is National American Beer Day. Did you know that?
I did not.
All right. So what is your favorite American beer? Do you have a favorite American beer?
I think Anheuser-Busch makes a delicious light beer that I like to drink often.
Okay. Well, that's a winner. You know, 20 million others who drink that beer on a weekly basis might be wrong, so that's definitely a winner. According to NBC, the number one American beer in the country is Russian River Pliny the Elder. I don't know if you've heard it before, but I have a friend out there in California. They say that they line up for like a day in order to pick up a six-pack, and they get one six-pack like a month. So it's like insane. The rush for this particular beer. Anyway, the reason why I bring it up is because I looked up nationalday.com and I found out that tomorrow is also National Black Cat Day. Do you have a favorite black cat, Ryan?
I actually had several black cats growing up, so I'm a big black cat fan. But you know, the one that people and everyone would know is whatever Sabrina the Teenage Witch's cat was on TJ.
Yeah, right, Salem. That's exactly who I was thinking. That was actually the number one most famous black cat. Wow, we're really in sync today. Aside from the technical difficulties, we are really in sync today. All right. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and get this thing started because I think our listeners have already put up enough of the craziness, so... All right, let's roll. All right, the power rankings are up first. So we're going to go through our top five power rankings for this week. And if you guys have been following on the website, Ryan has been doing this on his 12 Men on the Field article, which comes out weekly, and I'm sure the next one will be coming out very soon. But you want a little preview, go ahead, Ryan. Give us your top five power rankings for this week.
Yeah, so after last week, Monday night win, I have the Eagles leading the charge at one right now. Two might surprise you. I have KC back ahead of New England only because of the Dante Hightower news this morning. So New England at three, Seattle four, and then my big shocker one, my new dark horse to win the NFC South, the New Orleans Saints, rounding out the top five.
Oh, interesting. Wow, New Orleans. So the New Orleans Saints just made it off my list. They were actually at six. If this was a top six, they would be number six. And I think we were in agreement on a lot of this, but I actually, and I know that the Dante Hightower thing is going to be a little bit tough, but I actually still have the Patriots at two, and I have Kansas City at three because, you know, I just think their defense is actually not good, and I don't think that, and I think the Patriots' defense actually has quietly been not bad, and I know, you know, Dante Hightower not being there is going to impact that, but over the last 3 weeks, they've only allowed 14, 17, and 7 points, so it's actually better than most people have been giving them credit for, even though their secondary has been rated essentially the worst in the NFL. At four, a team that doesn't make any of your rankings, And I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. The Los Angeles Rams, I actually kind of believe a little bit. I mean, I think Jared Goff looks like a capable game manager, and I feel Todd Gurley is essentially back. You know, last year he didn't have a 100-yard rushing game. This year he's actually topped 100 in four of his last five. He's on pace for 2,103 yards from scrimmage, and that would be the most by a Ram since Steven Jackson back in 2006. So I think the Rams actually have a shot, and I have the Seahawks at number five. So what are your thoughts about the Rams? I know they didn't make your top five, so what do you think about that?
Yeah, so the Rams were in contention there at the end to make the list, but I went with New Orleans. So kind of similar where you have New Orleans. I have them just outside the top five. For me, the only thing is, and I like their talent and I like the way they're playing, but I do need to see, you know, there is a little bit of a bias for me with McVay being as young as he is. You know, Goff and Gurley have both kind of had good parts of their career early on and bad parts of their career early on, so I need to see it for a full 16 games before I buy in. And obviously, I like the Rams defense. You know, that's, we all understand they're a top five unit, so.
Yep.
I like them, and I like where they're at right now, and maybe I'm projecting too much considering it's a, you know, a power ranking for where we're at this moment. But for me, you know, I need to see it a couple more weeks before I fully go in on the Rams.
Well, tell us about the Saints. Why do you think the Saints are going to – how did the Saints make your top five this week?
Yeah, so I like the way the defense is playing. Obviously, you know, I think with Marshon Lattimore that the secondary stabilizing – I think that on the defensive line, you know, they're playing really well right now. So I think more important than anything is the defense is starting to come along. And then, you know, Ingram, who's been underrated the last couple years, has started to really show himself, I think, as a true workhorse running back. And when you factor in, you know, they called Alvin Kamara the young Darren Sproles. And I think at this point right now, he's looking like a young Darren Sproles. So you mix him in there. The emergence of Coleman in the receiving game, you know, I mean, Willie Snead is giving this offense next to nothing right now, and they don't really miss him. And they're winning games when Mike Thomas isn't going off and when Coleman is, and vice versa. So I just think that their offensive attack is more versatile than it's been in probably 5 or 6 years. And then, you know, defensively, I think that, you know, the high draft pick of Lattimore is paying dividends, and that they've made some smart moves in their front seven to kind of to bring the defense along a little bit. So obviously some missteps early, but they're on a roll right now, and I think that division, you know, Cam Newton can't take his foot out of his mouth. Matt Ryan might as well put a permanent diaper on every time he steps on the field now. And you know, and so I think it's really the division for the Saints to win, because Tampa's an absolute mess, and everybody's tweeting out about their playing time in Tampa. So you know, I think they're gonna run away with that division now at this point.
Yeah, let me ask you a question, because I also have the Eagles number one, but they also had injuries recently. They had Jason Peters, who's out for the season with a torn ACL and MCL, their longtime left tackle. And they also have a problem with Jordan Hicks, middle linebacker Jordan Hicks, who's out for the season with a torn Achilles. So, you know, protection was already a problem for Wentz, so this is, in my opinion, is going to be a big downgrade. They're leaving Lane Johnson at right tackle. You know, and of course, that on defense, they can't really afford to have injuries like this. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think this is going to impact them in the long run?
You know, at this point in the season, it's a little bit of a war of attrition. So everyone's going to go through injuries. But I think the Eagles have built a sound enough team. Obviously, you know, Peters is one of the best left tackles in football, so that hurts. Obviously, losing anybody off that defense, you know, any more people off that defense hurts. But where they lose him, they are going to get back Darby at some point here, right? And so that secondary should get better, and which has been kind of the weak point of the defense to this point. But, you know, for me, it really comes down to, you know, most teams, I think that there's really, you know, a couple of guys on each side of the ball that you can't lose or your season should be done. And for the Eagles, there are three players that I put on the list that can't lose are Carson Wentz, Alshon Jeffrey, and Fletcher Cox. So as long as those three are standing, I think they can survive and make it work. Is it ideal? No, but look at the landscape of the NFC right now. Team is healthy? The only team that hasn't really suffered any major injuries, to my recollection, is the Seahawks, and they have one of the worst offensive lines in football. So that team's not as far from unflawed. So Eagles aren't perfect, but I mean, Carson Wentz, if he can make throws like he did on that, I think it was the third touchdown on Monday night where he's getting hit by three guys. It was the play from, like, the sixth, and he hit the running back there in the back end zone. Like, if he can make those plays, I don't know how much protection he needs right now. He's got the body to take the hits.
He looks really good, and I will also say Zach Ertz gets an honorable mention, and those guys you shouldn't want to lose. He've had a really good connection in the red zone, and he is relying on him pretty heavily this year. He, dare I say, is among the top two tight ends now up there in the NFL, along with Gronkowski, in my opinion. Let me ask you this. Now that we are kind of talked about the Eagles, which one of those NFC teams do you think are going to challenge or have a chance to challenge the Eagles in the second half of the season here for a shot at that NFC championship?
I mean, for me, right now, as it stands, it's only the Seahawks, and that's just because, you know, the pedigree of Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, and then obviously having Russell Wilson at quarterback. And so when you have a bunch of guys who have done it, a coaching staff that's been there and done it, you know, as many years consistently they have over the last 5 or 6 years, have really been the class of that conference. So when you have that, that's a team that you always have to keep your eye out for. And in typical fashion, they came out of the gate stumbling, and by, you know, around this time, they start to stabilize and go on a run where they really elevate for the rest of the season. So I see the Seahawks doing that right now, and I think that they can continue that. But, you know, as the friend I mentioned 2 weeks ago on this podcast, he actually called me the next day and told me to stop pumping up the Eagles because I'm cursing them. But as I told him the next day that, you know, I think those two are the class of the NFC right now. And because I believe big on in the theory that it's really hard to travel east to west or west to east, you know, across a complete coast-to-coast trip and win, for me, it's really who gets the number one seed. If the Seahawks come to Philly, I like Philly. If the Philly has to go to Seattle, I like Seattle in that game.
Yep, I agree with all that. And I also think that there's some potential here that the Rams can make a push because they have such an elite defensive unit. And like I said, they have a really good ground game, something that Seattle has been lacking ever since they had to rely on Thomas Rawls and Eddie Lacy, which is a real shame. But we'll see what happens going forward because the Eagles also don't have anyone to ground. What's that?
I said, weren't you just in L.A. last week?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, actually. And I did watch the Rams, and they didn't look that great.
It sounds like you were drinking the Kool-Aid the whole time you were out there.
I was, and the Rams were playing they were playing the Seahawks, and they didn't look that good. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen? Who knows what's going to happen? All right, let's go on to our next. Let's go ahead and ring the bell on that one. Let's move on to our next topic. That's some fantasy football. That's the MVP at the halfway point of the fantasy season. The fantasy season is already halfway done. I can't believe it. So tell us, what are your fantasy football MVP at this point of the season?
Yeah, so I went with one quarterback who has been electric this year, and that's Carson Wentz. If you've had Carson Wentz, you know, two of the last 3 weeks, this man has been you know, just on fire. So, you know, throwing as many touchdowns and as many yards as he's racking up, it's been he's been unbelievable. So that was my first one. The second one, I wanted to go off the beaten path. This is not for you in standard league, so do not listen. But I wanted to take a chance to pump my own tires here.
Okay.
In most of my leagues, special leagues, were the tiers of distance field goals. They are tiered differently, and there's a big bonus for anyone kicking 50-plus yard field goals, like in one of the leagues I run. Ryan Succop has been putting up 20 to 30 points a week because that man is automatic from beyond 50. So for anyone who's looking to strengthen a position that not everybody's paying attention to down the stretch, I'd go him. But in all seriousness, too, I do have to make an honorable mention for Gronkowski. He's had about two bad weeks. One, he was out, and there was another week where he just didn't do a lot. But he's staying healthy to this point, knock on wood for my Pats. And, you know, he's still a weapon at the tight end spot. And obviously Ertz is up there. But, you know, I think Gronkowski's been steadily – you know, good for 10 points one way or the other in standard leagues to this point.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. He's in a class of his own. I think Ertz is getting there, but Gronkowski definitely a class of his own for tight ends. My guys are a little bit different. I'm going with Deshaun Watson. You know, I agree. Wentz has been a fantasy MVP. He was drafted very late, but Watson wasn't drafted at all. In fact, he wasn't even starting in the first game of the season, And even though he didn't start that first game of the season, he has never had a game without at least a touchdown. And he's only had one game without multiple touchdowns since he started. So he's had 17 total touchdowns already. He only has 5 INTs. He's lost only one fumble, and that was from the first game of the season. Did you know that his 15 passing touchdowns this year is the same as the total passing touchdowns of all Texans quarterbacks last year? And already he has 202 total rush yards in just, you know, this half of the fantasy season. I think Deshaun Watson, I mean, you could feasibly, and I have a lot of friends who actually have this, have Deshaun Watson and Carson Wentz on your fantasy team, and you're sitting super pretty right now, and you have some significant trade bait. And if you're in a dynasty league, you're basically on cloud nine for the next 10 years. So I like Deshaun Watson. I like Kareem Hunt as my second guy, and I know that's kind of really, you know, no surprise. His average draft position moved around a lot after Spencer Ware went down in the preseason, but it never went higher than the fourth round, which is amazing considering that he averages 102.4 rush yards per game, as well as 40.7 receiving yards on about 3.6 receptions per game. That is a lot, and he has 6 total touchdowns in just 7 games so far. That's pretty good for a fourth round pick. So those are my guys that I like in the fantasy football realm. So let's go ahead, ring the bell. Let's go on to our next topic. And our next topic is Martavis Bryant. He's all over the news because he's put himself all over the news. And you might have all seen this. October 23rd, he went on Instagram and he indicated, quote, Juju, and he's talking about Juju Smith-Schuster, wide receiver of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He says, Juju is nowhere near better than me, fool. All they need to do is give me what I want and y'all can have Juju and whoever else. So on October 23rd, he accentuated that by skipping a mandatory team meeting and later on saying it was a doctor's appointment, although there was never any indication that was accurate. And October 24th, Bryant then told ESPN that he, quote, wants out, period, if the Steelers don't try to include him more. He said, quote, I just want to be happy. I would like to be here, but if not, then oh well, just got to move on. On October 25th, Big Ben said that, well, yeah, we're trying to get him opportunities, but he's just not there. Sometimes I overthrow him, but sometimes he just doesn't run the right route, and we're just not on the same page. On October 25th, he's demoted to the scout team, and Mike Tomlin tells him he's inactive for the week. Oh, that's a lot of stuff from Martavis Bryant. So what are your thoughts on this entire situation, Ryan? With Martavis Bryant, right or wrong, going on social media, is it a situation where the Steelers should have deactivated him for Week 8, or was this kind of an overstep on their part?
Overstep? The only thing Martavis Bryant should do is shut the hell up. This man got suspended for a full season because he can't stop smoking weed. You know what? You're an NFL player, and I understand that it's legal in some states and that most of us in our life at one point or another have smoked weed and that it's not this big taboo thing anymore. You know what? When you're making that kind of money, NFL money, can you put it aside for 10 years? Can you just, like, the same crap with Josh Gordon for years. Can you just go be an addict on your own time? You got a chance right now during these 10 years to do something else that you can never do. So this team stands by him, brings him back, and now he's pissed about his targets? Oh, get the hell out of here. This man, this guy who I was super high on before the season started.
Yeah.
The worst.
Me too.
The worst kind of receiver in the NFL. The diva receiver who thinks he's great when all he can do is run a fly route. Do you know one of the last guys in Pittsburgh who thought he was better than them and thought that he made them, not the other way around, is Mike Wallace. What the hell has Mike Wallace done the last 5 years? Suck.
Riding the pine tonight.
Martavis Bryant will be Martavis Bryant will be a footnote in 3 years if he's even still in the damn league. So, you know what? He can try to blast his way out of town. If I was Pittsburgh, and this is the part where we disagree from our pre-show notes, I would inactivate this man every single week. Sit down and shut up. Enjoy. Enjoy
the
bench. You don't get to go anywhere. Or pull a Bill Belichick and trade his ass to Cleveland. See ya.
Yep. So I totally agree with the social media part of it and the Martavis Bryant acting out part. I think all that is absolutely true. He should just shut the heck up and get on the field and play wherever he needs to play, wherever the Steelers need to use him. But the reason why I thought the Steelers should not have deactivated him in Week 8 is because they really need to get rid of him. And I think the best way to do that is to keep him in and feature him a little bit so he shuts the heck up, but also build up a little bit of trade value, because there's got to be teams out there that would like to take the shot off him. And I think that you could probably offload him and get something in return, and that's the best thing right now, because obviously he's not welcome in Pittsburgh anymore, and he made the situation bad for himself because they did stand by him for that entire year, and it did guarantee that they were going to put him in there, and now he's acting like a big baby because they got Juju Smith-Schuster out there. And poor Juju Smith-Schuster had his bike stolen in the same week. Poor guy. He's had a rough week. But, I do agree, though. Yeah, right. That's true. All right, so let's go ahead and ring the bell on that one. Let's go to our next topic. I want to talk to you a little bit about the poor Green Bay Packers. Now, I hate the Packers. You know that because I'm a Bears fan. But you know what? You can't hate Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback because he is definitely one of the best in the business. And we saw what Brett Hundley did to them when he started last week. He showed Zeke practically zero chemistry of any receiver, could not complete passes in any way, shape, or form. They were all just basically dumpsville. He did manage to run a touchdown into the end zone, but this is not something that looks good for the Green Bay Packers. What do you think? Do the Green Bay Packers have any hope without Aaron Rodgers this year?
Zero hope. This is a team that has stupidly asked their quarterback to do everything for them for years. And when you have that formula, you can't, you know, I talked about that. I think there's a lot of teams out there that they can, you know, suffer any, that they can survive anything but, you know, one of three guys going down. In Green Bay, it's one of one. It's all on Aaron Rodgers' shoulders, which is the argument I always come back to when I do this with you, when we talk about Aaron Rodgers, is that, you know what, if Aaron Rodgers wants more help, take a page out of Brady's playbook and take less. But he won't do that, and so he has a high contract, so they can only put around him what they can put around him. So it just is what it is. But this team is, they're a one-man team, and that one man is out for most of the season, if not all. So put a fork in them. I'd be surprised if they win more than two games the rest of the year.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think they are a mess. They do not have a strong enough – I mean, you know, they do have some semblance of a run game now, but it's not strong enough for them to do anything with it at this point. I think that they don't have a good enough defense to stay in games without their quarterback, unlike some other teams in the league. Packers, I'm sorry, they're going down in flames for the rest of the season without Aaron Rodgers. Let's turn to another team. Let's talk about the Arizona Cardinals. Now, maybe there was no hope for them anyway because they lost David Johnson early in the season, but now Carson Palmer is out. Essentially, he's put on IR now, so he's not coming back. They're now going to rely on Drew Stanton, maybe Blaine Gabbert. What are your thoughts about the Arizona Cardinals?
Yeah, so I hope by the end of the season that I can go back to not talking about the Arizona Cardinals ever again. they have one good receiver. I mean, they have two, but John Brown will never be healthy again, apparently. So you can write him off. So they have one good receiver. They have an all-world running back. And then they have a bunch of overrated players. Carson Palmer's not good anymore. And now obviously injured. The defense is overrated. And, you know, Tyrann Mathieu is a good player. But when you let guys like DJ Swearinger go, who's making a huge impact right now elsewhere, and Calais Campbell leaves, and you bring in guys like Chandler Jones, who I'll say it again for all you people because I know every year I hear this when the Patriots defense starts off slow, the Patriots miss Chandler Jones. Yeah, they do. They do miss Chandler Jones' sacks in September when he racks up 8 or 9. But when he fades off at the end of the year when the games matter, you don't need him anymore. So Arizona's the perfect place for a guy like Chandler Jones, because he can just go and beat up on bad teams and doesn't have to perform in the playoffs because they can't make it. So this team's overrated. It's a joke. Bruce Arians, overrated. He's an absolute moron. You know, again, coming out at the end of last year or the beginning of this year and talking about how the week one loss derailed their whole season last year against the Patriots. You lost in week one and you gave up? That was it for the Cardinals last year. It seems a joke. So no, they're gonna win maybe one game down the stretch, but they are also cooked.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that the Arizona Cardinals were cooked actually from the time that David Johnson was out, but this definitely seals their fate. Drew Stanton, I don't even know how he's in the league anymore. Blaine Gabbert, we already saw what we can get out of Blaine Gabbert. It's not good. And you're right, John Brown is perpetually injured. I just don't see anything happening. I feel bad for Larry Fitzgerald in a way because I think he's a great player and probably deserves better. But, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles. So that is that. And let's talk about one more team before we sign off, and that is the Atlanta Falcons. Obviously, they are now 3-3 after losing three in a row. The latest to the Patriots last Sunday night on the, in the Super Bowl rematch, hardly a rematch. Now, Matt Ryan is a big reason why they're not doing well, averaging just 265 passing yards per game. He only has seven total TDs to six interceptions in six games this season. Last season, he only had seven interceptions all season long, and he's almost there already. After six games, he's projecting to just have under 19 total touchdowns for the season, which would be his lowest total since his first year in the league in 2008. So, what are your thoughts on the Falcons? Can they turn this around? Is Matt Ryan just cooked? I mean, what's happening here?
Well, I mean, it's a two-pronged issue. First issue, obviously, is that the Patriots reached in their hearts and reached in their chests, ripped out their hearts, stole their pride and pants them in front of the world last year, and you just don't recover from that. So, you'll never hear from this team again. They're done. They're gonna have to do it with somebody else. Matt Ryan, as I said, you know, he almost proved me wrong last year, but then in the most spectacular fashion proved me right about what a choke artist he is. And then, you know, you look at him the other night. There was a couple times he had receivers open, and he just sailing the ball all over Gillette Stadium. It was a sight to see Sunday night. But also, did you hear about Sarkisian today, the news about him?
No, what was that?
Oh, it was nothing, because this idiot of a franchise can't figure out that he's ruining that offense and they haven't fired him yet. So I guess we'll just employ him all year. Take one of the best offenses in football last year and cut all of their numbers in half. Oh, what do you do on fourth and goal? Do you run a jet sweep to your fifth best playmaker in Taylor Gabriel? Sarkisian does, but, you know, we all know about his past, so maybe he was a little bit half in the bag the other night. It was a night game, so what do you expect? But they're a joke. This team... That defense that was supposed to be young and progressing looks lost and uninterested. And, you know, Grady Jarrett looks like he's taken a step back. Deion Jones is about the only one I was impressed with the other night or have been impressed with this season. And, you know, definitely a good idea that they've only targeted, you know, even after this game, now Julio Jones twice in the red zone. I would keep throwing it to everybody but your all-world receiver. And then he comes out after the game and accuses the Patriots of firing off fireworks to contribute to the fog, which, by the way, just for everyone who doesn't go to Patriot games, those are actually muskets. It's eight replica guns from the Revolutionary War. It's not fireworks. And gunpowder doesn't create fog like that. But that's cute. Good to know that we are just living inside of Julio Jones and the Falcons' heads still. Last February will never end for them.
Well, this is no surprise to anybody who's been listening to the show how Ryan feels about the Atlanta Falcons, but they are definitely doing a good job of proving him right so far. So you think that there is no chance of them turning it around? I think there is a shot. I'm not saying that they will, but they are playing Tampa Bay twice, and Tampa Bay has the worst pass defense in the league, and perhaps it gives Ryan an opportunity to improve. They do play Carolina twice, so that's the 15th best pass defense, so that's just middle of the road, and they play Dallas and the Jets, who have bottom 10 defenses themselves. So six of his last 10 games are against arguably favorable passing matchups. Maybe he can turn things around, but I don't think the Falcons have what it takes to turn it around completely, and I think it will be an issue. I suspect that they will be a mediocre team that, if they make the playoffs, will just sneak in and lose immediately, which, it's quite a drop-off, a huge drop-off from what we saw last year. So that brings us down to the end of the show, so I'm going to go ahead and ring the bell on our last topic here and blow the horn on the entire show. So tell us, give us your Twitter and your Instagram account so that people can follow you, Ryan.
Yes, Instagram is football_garbage_time, and you can find me on Twitter at RyanWhitfieldNE, and make sure to go check out my boys at DraftingSleepers.com, the social network for fantasy sports.
And of course, tune back into our website for all the content coming into the new week. Our NFL picks will be coming up soon, so you'll be able to check that out. We've been doing really well, and I know that we've been going head-to-head for a while with Urban Sports Scene as well, so you'll get some information on how they're doing against us. And tune back in to our website, footballgarbagetime.com, to check out Ryan's 12 Men on the Field, which comes out on a weekly basis. And of course, we have DFS picks coming up on the website soon as well. And in the meantime, you can follow me at FB Garbage Time, and the Thursday night game is about to start, so enjoy your NFL week.